This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. I'm your host, Oz Oddball. Thank you for joining me. On tonight's episode, we are talking to Christina, who is an artist from our network, Straight Up Strange Productions. So Christina goes by The Crescent Hair at Twitter and also on her shop. And Christina isn't just an artist. Among many things, Christina also practices witchcraft and is a hedge witch and also has had some run-ins with the Men in Black. So a very interesting person to talk to, someone who I consider a friend, and has always been a good person to have a chat with on Twitter. And this is the first time I've ever actually had a chance to speak to her face-to-face per se, but speak to someone audibly rather than just through messages. So this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed doing this interview, and I definitely think I'm going to get Christina back, and I think you're all going to really enjoy listening to some of the banter and some of the conversations. There was some problems with some audio there due to internet dropping in and out, and it was very hard to edit it out. So you will hear some dead spots on Christina's end, which I talk over it anyway. As you all know, I talk with a mouthful of marbles underwater. It was a great interview, really good, and you'll get a lot out of it, I think. And definitely check out all of her artwork. The descriptions will be in the links below and also in the Twitter posts that I put out. And also, you can find her on Etsy, The Crescent Hair. So crescent as in moon, hair as in big rabbit. She's got some great artwork. She did the artwork for the Oddball Hotel, which is audio show I was doing, and it will come back. A few people have been asking when's the Oddball Hotel coming back. As soon as I can put pen to paper, it will come back. That's essentially what it is. It's me holding it up. And I think you're in for a really good show. So tune in, pop it on, enjoy your weekend. If you're in Australia, enjoy your long weekend. For you lucky people who get 4 days off in a row, good on you. Nurses and firefighters like myself don't get that, but that's all right. You have your day off, and I'll roll in my cash. Tax man gets most of that. We'll enjoy the show, and I'll be talking to you all again very soon. And the next news episode will be out on Monday. So enjoy. Welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. You're listening to me, Oz Oddball, and on tonight's show, we're doing an interview, and tonight I've got Christina with me, and Christina's an artist on our podcast network, Straight Up Strange Productions, and really interested to talk to Christina, because Christina's also a practitioner in witchcraft, and that's a area that I'm interested in learning more about, but I've never really dabbled too much in. I've looked into a bit of the occultism stuff, but never too much in the witchcraft, and it's good to sort of start getting some people who know what they're talking about to talk to me about this stuff. So welcome, Christina.
Hey, Oz. Thanks for letting me know that I know what I'm talking about. I led you on very well. No, I'm kidding. I'm just humble.
Honestly, some of the stuff that we've sort of spoken about in the past, I think you definitely know what you're talking about, especially for a novice like myself. There's so many things. I haven't touched on witchcraft too much in the episodes, only mm-hmm. because I'm trying to gain a bit more information on it. My thing is more the blood and bone stuff, like Bigfoot, Yowie, ET, that type of thing. So this spiritualism stuff, it's really caught my attention.
Well, I think with that too is like things like, you know, Bigfoot, Yowie, extraterrestrials, Mothman, like all those kind of things, there's a pattern to them.
Yep.
And there's common knowledge out there with something like witchcraft practice. It's all over the place. Like one person may do something totally different from another person and believe different things and do different things. So there's more of a wide scope of variety there.
Yeah.
So
I thought we'll start. So you're an artist and mm-hmm. I love your artwork, by the way.
Thank you.
I really love seeing what comes next. I'm always waiting to check your Twitter feed. So to begin, you can find Christina at Crescent Hair on Twitter, and the Etsy shop is The Crescent Hair at Etsy. So I'll have those links in the description below as well, and they'll be in the Twitter post when this launches. So do you want to talk a bit about your art? Like, when did you start?
A very long time ago. also to thecrescenthair.com redirects you right to my Etsy as well. So if anybody's looking for that, it's easier than the whole Etsy URL. Yeah, I've done it forever. I feel like I've always been like the weird kid drawing like dragons and unicorns.
Yeah.
I basically excelled in art like my entire childhood and in the high school. And I really wasn't interested in anything else. Like I wasn't academic, so I kind of leaned on that to do things. And then I sort of got out of it. My daughter was born and I was raising her and I really didn't do much with art. And then one year I decided to go back and do it, went back and got a degree in graphic design because that was the closest at that point where you could be an artist and still make some money.
Yeah, right.
So I had to pick something, but now I kind of put that to rest and now I'm doing my art now. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's been forever.
Honestly, everything I've seen from when you first joined the network, it's always been great artwork, but I'm seeing it just become even better every time you make something new. It's like, it's just the Snallygaster. That was really, really yeah. well done. Yeah.
I had no idea. Like I've heard of the Snallygaster, but I didn't know. So I had to research and I linked up with the woman who's doing the American Snallygaster Museum. She reached out to me. Right. She started following me and then I started following her and then we got talking and then I created the Snallygaster.
Nice.
So, and that piece will be in that museum.
Right. So that's for the museum. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. It'll be in the museum. Yep.
Awesome. So it looks like something out of a medieval tome or something like that. Like if it was black and brown or sepia, it would look like something out of a tome. It's really, really well done.
Yeah. Apparently. So the biggest thing for every artist is we're always obsessed with what our look is, what our style is. And we spend days thinking about that kind of thing. Like that's one of those things that always sits in the back of our heads because we're like, well, what's our style? Do we have a style? And I've been told that several times already, like the exact same thing that you said. And it's like, it fluctuates like from realistic to that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I mean, I think maybe I have a style now.
yeah. And then it's awesome that you can go from something like that, but then you can also do something like your Injured Cold art poster. That's
which is like my favorite.
That's cool. Yeah, that is really cool. It's I could see that being the poster for someone doing just a whole show on Injured Cold, but
that freaked everybody out, and it just knowing that it just like, you know, made people unsettled just put joy in my heart because that's where I was going for.
Yeah.
So he could do your taxes, but he could also like maybe be an alien that's you don't know what he's gonna do.
Yeah.
So
he's like he's either going to bring out a laser gun or he's gonna bring out a jazz guitar.
Like. Exactly. And I kind of played with him like because you know how there's this theory that he's a man in black.
Yes.
Like there was this little theory floating around. So I kind of made him in that image in a way.
And you've got we'll get into it a bit later, but you've got a bit of a history with that too.
Oh, yes. Yes. So, I do have some crazy, I have a crazy story. A
little bit of foreboding there.
Yes.
Yeah. So the artwork, you do it not just as posters and things. There's a lot of other items people can buy with this artwork on, isn't there?
Yeah, my Etsy shop's full of like different things. Like a lot of my designs are on t-shirts, they're on tote bags. You know, just I like purposeful art. So if I can take a piece of my art and put it on something you can actually use, like a tee or a tote or a sticker, I will do that. So, and of course, there's some images I don't put on any of those because they just won't translate well. But for the most part, my stuff's on there. So,
yeah.
And I'm open to ideas. So if anybody sees something and they want it on something I don't offer, my DMs and my messages are always open. So,
yeah, cool. Well, you did the artwork for the Oddball Hotel, which will be coming back eventually. It's just me awesome. Being slack and not putting pen to paper.
That's okay. I love that series. So,
I really enjoy it.
It's all
too.
Good.
And it's actually it's all good. Really funny because, I didn't have not many people in my inner circle actually know I do a podcast. It's mm-hmm. my two best mates know I do, and that's it. And my brother. None of my family know that I do this, and it's more of a I have not that I have a really conservative family, but it's more of a this is a thing for me.
And mm-hmm. I don't it's want, yours.
Yeah, I don't want half the family coming in and saying, oh, well, on that last episode, Oz, you could have done this, you could have done that. That this is sort of my place to sort of get the weird out. And I noticed, so with the Oddball Hotel, the first thing that a couple of my friends who now listen to the show saw was the artwork, and they're like, oh, that reminds me of a lot of Aussie art that we had back in when we were growing up, where we had all this old pub art, and used to find it at truck stops and stuff on the way out to Western Australia and South Australia especially. And there used to be these pubs with all these characters hanging out the sides of the pub, and that's what I sort of mentioned to you. That's what I showed you, a picture of one of those pub pictures. And
yeah, you did. I tried really hard to get it. Like, yeah, I was just like, okay.
You nailed it. They honestly thought so. I had tracked down one of the artists that we grew up watching, looking at. So I was like, oh, that's a big pat on your back because
dang, yeah, right? Yeah, oh, they, man, that's
they
awesome.
Really, they really enjoyed it. And
that's
then,
pretty cool.
Then you did the artwork for the humanoid elephant.
Yeah,
which is one of my most favorite stories, and it's really interesting because the fellows at Cryptonauts podcast, they have mm-hmm. drawn their own version of it. And he did it in a way that was very different to yours, and then mm-hmm. I've got a different perspective on it as well. I did a little doodle that I showed you, and yes. it was like a my perspective. It's more of a more of a person, maybe an ET, or maybe a person in a mm-hmm. in a hazmat suit, a new version of hazmat suit. But you and the Cryptonauts both went down the path of the cryptid, and
yes.
I found that really, really interesting. Everyone can sort of look at a story and have a different picture in their head from reading that story.
Oh, definitely. And you know, Rob Morphy does such a good job with cryptid design. I drew mine and posted it, and then was looking through because I was going off. Okay, so if there was really this elephant humanoid, what would it look like? Because people called it an elephant.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, well, you know, if I didn't know any better, what would I think it looked like when somebody was explaining it to me? Yeah. Like I had seen your artwork. I had seen, you know, other people's artwork where, you know, the suit with the tube and everything. Yeah. And I was like, no, I have to make it more relatable than this. Like, yeah. I have to make it like, if I didn't know what the hell an elephant humanoid was, when I got told what it was, that would pop up in my head. Because I would be thinking an elephant with gray skin and a trunk, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
That's how I arrived to mine. And then afterwards, you know, I found his and I was like, you know, maybe he's thinking along the same lines. I don't know, but
yeah.
Maybe we're just all creepy. Well, I don't know, but.
I think it's interesting. I think because I think what your background is makes you think about things in different ways. Like myself being a firefighter, I see things like in a more mechanical equipment style way. So as soon as I heard what was being described, I thought, well, that reminds me of some of the hazmat gear that we wear. I thought, well, being the time frame, but then as I said, like, you all saw it as something different. And it's really interesting because we don't actually have, there's a little tiny outline that someone drew back then, but we don't actually have a artist rendition of that.
No.
That same story, and this is one sort of gets under my skin a bit about here in Australia, is because we still have quite a hush-hush thing around cryptids and aliens and stuff, especially back then we did. Like, it's only been recently that you could really start talking about this stuff in big ways. Because of that, no one really followed that up. That was like a quirky news story at the end of a thing. Whereas if this had have happened in America, there would have been artwork. There would have been people out there searching for it.
Yep. People would have been on radio shows.
Exactly.
Flying to New York City, talking about it on TV shows. Yeah, because I think a lot of people hear like sensationalism.
Yeah.
Like, and as the time goes by, we have to get more and more sensationalist, because that's what holds our attention span.
I think we have that, you know, as well, so. But I think the only thing with us is that I wouldn't say we're very conservative, but we're very, there can be some very judgmental stuff in Australia. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the time it's really good. We're very open, very free, love my country and all that. But when it comes to the UFO and the alien stuff, remember even when I grew up, all of like the In Search of with Leonard Nimoy and all that, even that was put late on in the night. Shows like Supernatural, like made up shows, started off in a normal block and then put on at like 10:30, 11 at night where nobody ever saw it.
It's influencing the children, Oz. Yeah. Come on now.
Drove me insane. It's like we all thought there for ages that shows like Supernatural had actually died out, only to find out that it had like six more seasons.
Yeah.
And it was going fairly strong in America. And we're going, okay, well, in Australia, it's been made out that it's a dead in the water show. So it's definitely a culture shift happening over here.
Definitely. Like, and you know, I know nothing. Like, that's why sometimes I ask you questions, because I'm just like, I don't know what it's like to live in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, so it's great. Yeah.
It honestly is great. I love Australia a bit. It's just a really laid back, chilled place.
No, that's good. Sometimes that's what I've heard. Sometimes with here, I'm on the fence sometimes here, but you know, I digress. several different reasons that we don't really, people know, people just know. We don't have to get into it.
Is it the lizard people?
Yes, the reptilians. I tell you what, like, the minute somebody starts, like, nothing makes me crazier than I'll be watching this really good show and I'm just like, oh, there's all this good information, they're talking about UFOs and aliens, and then all of a sudden they have this one lady come out and she's always like, I had an affair with reptilian species, the aliens. And I'm like, I gotta turn it off now. I gotta turn it off now. And I'm mad because I spent an hour watching it.
Yeah, it's definitely the fly in the soup. And Sandman from the Parareal podcast, I went on his show and we talked about a few conspiracy theory stuff. And he and I have been saying I'm going to have him on the show very soon as well, because we're just going to do a whole episode where we just go, you know what, we're not going to be doing facts and stuff like that. We're just going to throw our imaginations to the wind and just talk to people.
talk about resilience.
Just to get it out of our system, because as you said, every time it comes up in a plausible conversation, it does throw the conversation off into a more.
It really does. Like, my mind goes to like my grocery list. Like I've checked out. You really?
There is actually a way. I've watched a few shows where there is a way of doing it that isn't completely nuts. And where you can see the potential of the theory. But it's like getting a good chat with a flat earther, and you'll be having a chat with a flat earther and it it'll be going great. Like, and this is a problem. I've been wanting to get a flat earther on the show, and the last three I've talked to, they'll be going great. And then all of a sudden they'll say something just completely wacky that I'm like, that is just what? What are you doing?
Yep, you know, checked out. You checking your grocery list now. Yep.
And I'm like, come on. Like, I'm trying to actually give you a voice here to state your claim pretty well. But then you're going to go throw something crazy out there. Like the planet is a eyeball of a god or something, which I'll go into that because I just did an episode on the whole planet being a terrarium. And and I'll go into that. But I think you've got to go into it breaking it down a bit more rather than just go...
Exactly.
Great facts, crazy thing, and then great facts.
Like, not like the stuff you read on Google that everybody else has written. Exactly. And you're just basically digesting it and throwing it out you see.
I see it more as whenever I do episodes like that, I also did one on the DMT elves. And I see it more of a philosophical thing. So I'll approach it from more of a philosophical base because I don't actually believe the earth is a terrarium and I don't actually believe the machine elves per se. I think they exist in the sense of what people see during a DMT trip, but I don't think they exist in the greater scheme of things. I'll approach it more from a philosophical way.
And I think that's how you approach it. And that helps you what you do. And, to bring it up, with my art, I approach it differently.
Yep.
So it's very interesting how all that works out. Like I said, if somebody come up and told me about an elephant alien, what would I think it is? Indrid Cold. Okay, well, what if he's really an alien and he doesn't know human behavior? And so all he has seen possibly is maybe our TV transmissions telling them that we smile a lot and show a lot of gum. Well, he's going to show up and terrify Mr. Derenberger half to death with this creepy ass grin. So I had to think about, okay, make him creepy and unsettling, but slightly where you would sit down and talk to him maybe. And that's with the elephant alien, same thing. I'm sorry, but if you saw that walking through a pond towards you, you'd probably be like, I need to go, but it's cute. It's a little cute. I'm going to sit here and talk to it. And so that's how I think of things. Okay, it's terrifying, but how can I break it down to where it's not so terrifying so people think about it more?
And I love the rubber duck being chucked in there too.
Yeah. I was like, it's got to be personable. A lot of my old stuff, I'm going to try doing it digitally.
Oh, nice.
Because I feel like the digital stuff is just making it pop for me.
Yep.
So, I think I'm still going to leave the rubber duck in there, but that's on the list to be redone digitally. So,
Well, before you go on to more of your experiences and stuff, what would your few tips be for up and coming artists?
Oh, goodness. I'm very, I have two art degrees, but I'm very non-traditional. Just do what you want to do, do what you feel you need to do. Don't think about what the art world's doing. Do what you feel you want to do with your art because it's your expression of yourself. And that there's nothing wrong. Let's say you're doing all your expressional art, stuff that you want to do, but then you want to make them, you want to make some money. It's okay to get trends, follow into trends that way. There's nothing wrong with making money. But just kind of stay true to yourself always. That's the number one. And the problem is sometimes art school doesn't tell you that. They just want to, it's like a factory. They take you in, tell you what they want you to know, and then they spit you out and you're just kind of floating around. Also, I don't believe art degrees are essential. I've never believed that. When I went to school for the second time, I learned some valuable information, but it was more of stuff that I was doing my own different way. And I relearned it for what they wanted me to do with it. So I don't, you know, people maybe after you for getting an art degree, unless you're going to go get a job like in the field and they require degrees, as long as you know what you're doing and you're happy and you can sustain, you know, sustain yourself, just do it, just go for it. Yeah. So that's basically like my top. And then another thing is don't compare yourself. Like it's really hard with social media. You know, we're all comparing ourselves to each other and whatnot, but don't do it. You don't have to.
And that goes for podcasting as well. Anyone who's getting into podcasts, I always say, look, try. It's very hard to not look at the numbers. But a lot of people get in for the wrong reason. And I think it's probably the same thing with that. A lot of people think they're getting in and they're going to make a lot of money really quickly, or they're going to be able to leave their job and just do this forever. And I think it's probably not the, for podcasters, at least from my point of view, it's probably good just to keep that job and keep this as a side hustle. And then maybe one day, like, I think it's all about the grind for podcasting. At least.
With art, it's the same. Yep. It's art is the same thing. Art is not a job. It's a hustle. Yep. And I'm being straight up honest like that. Yep. It's basically, you know, you may have to work a job while you're perfecting your craft, and you may have to make a decision when you feel that you're comfortable enough to make that leap to actually sustain yourself and treat it like a job. But then that goes back and you got to be careful about burnout and things like that. But I mean, people act like, you know, everybody can be an artist and we can all do whatever. And that's not the case. A lot of people that are sustaining themselves with their art, they're hustling. Like, we don't have, you know, we don't have off days. We don't have schedules. Like, there's nights I'm up until 4 a.m. Yep. You know what I mean? Working on things. So it's a lot different than, you're the busiest person I know. It's like, it's not a 9-to-5. And if you want somebody to tell you what to do and to have a schedule, you're not going to get it with that. So, but that's also a good thing, because you can take off if you want to. So it's freedom to me. So
I think what annoys me is exactly what you said before, and I absolutely hate it, is that we're seeing that every single part of our society is being penetrated by this thing of you need to have a degree in something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember I wanted to work in radio, and nowhere will take you in radio here in Australia if you don't have a media degree. And, you know, and even then you're probably lucky if you get to be the guy who fixes the gear for the first 3 or 4 years. And then all of a sudden podcasting came about, and I could run a weekly news show and a weekly, whatever show right here on the internet. And it fulfills that need to want to do something creative, but you know, in the back of your head, I've still got to be having, this is a hustle. This is something you got to do. I've got a young family, so it's like, I'm not going to go into my boss and say, I quit. Try to live on TeePublic sales, because I don't think I have electricity left to actually even do the podcast.
Split a box of cereal between all of you.
That's right.
I mean, and the thing is, the whole art thing, like, that's the one thing that annoys me so badly, is the whole the degree thing and the snobbery and everything. And, you know, by all means, if you have a degree in art, I am not bashing anybody at all. If you made that decision to go back and get your degree in art, that is fantastic. I have one myself, but I think the way the field is with like jobs and whatnot, I just feel like the emphasis on a degree is just too great. Like, it's just, it's, you know, there's too much of an emphasis on a degree. And then so you have people that can't afford to go to school, or, you know, can't go to school. They're missing out on those jobs. So then the whole field becomes really unequal. So, I mean, that's my biggest thing. And I ran into the same thing with graphic design. Like, if you didn't go to the school that the design firm really liked, you may not get a job there because they're picking people from a certain college. So, you know, it's, and I'm sure it's like that in other fields, but I can only speak from experience for those fields. So.
And I think it's the beast that we've created. Like I've got another fellow I'm talking to who he's a audio mixer and does a bit of backing track music and stuff like that. And I'm going to bring him on the show and he goes, oh, well, I don't really think, he said, I want to come and do an interview, but he said, I don't really think I'm going to have what you really want because I don't talk about weird things. I said, no, I said, I want to bring you on as a differential. I want to bring you on someone who, you know, anyone who's listening to my show who wants to get into podcasting and audio mixing, that I can bring you on and talk about that. And we can have a discussion about mixing and, you know, what equipment to use, how to set up your room, that type of thing. And I said, that's what I said to him. I said, you know, we tend to put ourselves in these, we pigeonhole ourselves and we say, okay, well, I'm now this type of YouTuber or this type of podcaster or this type of artist. And and companies do that to us as well.
Yes.
You know, you get these advertisers and the advertiser might love an episode because you were out there and crazy and said some outrageous things, but then they hate your next episode because the next episode you were tame and you didn't want to go crazy on the, you know, you wanted to be respectful of the topic.
Exactly.
But they don't care about that. They just want you to be outrageous.
To be wild.
Yeah, exactly. And be a shock jock, essentially.
Exactly. My thing is if you stay true to yourself first, the rest of the stuff will fall in line.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that 100%.
So.
100%. All right. So, and honestly, you've given me some, you gave me a bit of a boost there when I first started getting back into doing my little cartoons and sketches and things. And
yeah, you did a good job.
I had a bad experience. I was at school and I was told by an art teacher, no, you're, especially because I'm left-handed, I move my hand in a weird way. Like I almost write upside down if you look at how I'm writing. And I'd been told all my life, no, you're doing that wrong. You're holding the brush wrong. You're holding the pencil wrong. And then they'd try to get me to do it their way. And then I'd completely ruin what I was trying to do. And then I'd be downgraded in my marks. I'm going, but you like the art I do, but you don't like how I do it.
Yeah.
So it's like,
that's another big issue that I have with it. Like, you know, you can't change the fact you're left-handed and there's ways to get around smudging the paper and everything like that. They just don't want to teach you that. So, but they were taught that before. So it's like a chain, like until somebody breaks it, this is how it's going to be taught.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And also I think the internet, for all of its woes, I think the internet is one of the best things we have for that type of learning. It can be used as such a great. I've been speaking to people who have never done wood turning or never done metalwork in their life. Now all of a sudden, because of some one or two YouTube channels, they're now making coffee tables. They're making furniture and stuff. And I'm going, that's really cool. Whereas before, you'd have to go and you'd have to take a class. You had to pay money for that class, and then maybe after maybe week 12, you might actually get to build something.
Yeah, yeah. And what if you're not being, you know, and you're not, you won't be able to go at your own pace.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal too. Like some people just need to go at their own pace. Like I have really bad ADHD. I got to do what I got to do. To do what I can do. So I, a lot of times have to go at my own pace and I have to look at it a different way in order to absorb it. So if I'm paying for a class and it's 6 weeks long, that just stresses me out. Cause I'm like, am I going to know this by the end of the 6 weeks?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, exactly.
And I think the pandemic did a lot of things too for that. I really do, because there's people realizing that, you know, their 9-to-5 job didn't fulfill them. And then they go on YouTube, they go on Instagram, you know, they go on TikTok and they pick up something that completely, you know, makes them happy, like wood turning or metal smithing or something like that. So,
yep. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, I think it's a really healthy thing. I think we're getting to back to a stage where a person doesn't have to be one thing their whole life anymore. You know,
exactly.
A lot of all of our parents and grandparents would have been No, you become a mechanic and you're a mechanic until the day you die.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like I become a mechanic and then I turn 40 and I decide that I want to go and do something completely different. I know a fella who went from being a mechanic to going join the police force at 40 years old.
Yeah, that's he needed a change. And that's another thing. It's like, you know, we need to let people know that it's okay to change your mind.
Yeah.
Like you don't, the thing is like, and that's why I think people have such a hard time dealing with and understanding how art people work. Yep. Because we're not doing that. Like, yeah, we could be an artist for our entire lives, but we're constantly changing. We're constantly evolving to something else. But that's so against what society wants us to do. Like, that's why they frowned at your friend who, you know, became a policeman at 40 some years old. Exactly. Because they think that he should have stayed in that and been happy until he retired.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think exactly. Once that whole society expectation falls away and we start doing things, it's going to be way better. Yep. And I think the pandemic has changed that a little bit. So
100%. Well, even a bit before the pandemic, my sister was a graphic designer and mm-hmm. She decided she was sick of doing graphic design. She wanted to get back into doing her own art separately. And she went off and became a prison guard. So
mm-hmm.
how different could you get? And all the power to her. That's excellent.
Yeah. I mean, she really made a change, but fulfills her, makes her happy.
Sometimes you got to do
She's got to do what she got to do. Yep. Exactly.
So, we'll move on to now some of your encounters. Actually, before we get into encounters, witchcraft. Sorry, we're skipping all over right. that. Yeah. So witchcraft.
It's okay.
So, explain what type of witchcraft you do and what you... sort of not a 101, but a baseline of what you do.
Okay. Just like a preface it, like I said, not everybody does the same thing. And what I do may not be right for you and so forth and so forth. Also, witchcraft as a whole is not a religion. It's a practice. So people think it's a whole religion. It's not. It's usually just the practice.
Okay.
That's a whole other ballgame, but anyway. So I would say I am definitely like an eclectic witch. Like I do a bunch of different things that I feel are appropriate for me to do and that work for me. Some people would describe me possibly as like a hedge witch. It just depends on, you know, I don't usually like to label myself. It's just basically what I describe myself as. I also use a lot of like nature stuff. Like I use the elements, you know, I'm out there in the yard picking stuff to use. I use a lot of stones and crystals and whatnot. The other day I made moon water.
Okay.
So it's kind of like my practice is very nature-based, where somebody else may do something totally different than that. So,
right.
And I've been doing this for a long time.
So hedge witch. So it's hedge witch. That's your nature based witchcraft, is it?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
So pretty much. Yeah. It's like they're the closest to me to like the nature based witchcraft. So.
Okay. Yep. So because I did did a whole episode on druidism one day,
mm-hmm.
and that was quite interesting, but very different. It's everyone has this perception, I think, because of fantasy RPGs and things like that are very much all about earth, and they're not really as much as what the real life druids aren't as much into that as what people expect. Like they're not doing the things like that a hedge witch would do, like what you've just explained.
Yes, exactly.
They're definitely more of a religion So what other types are there besides hedge witches?
Oh, there's tons.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on like whether you're going to look like somebody like in just a witchcraft practice or if they're actually like a Wiccan witch.
Oh, okay.
You know, because Wiccas are an actual religion. So there's several different ones involved with that. I know about Wiccan stuff. I'm not a practitioner of Wiccan. Like, I don't follow Wicca. So, my knowledge on that is a little less than, you know, everything else. But I know like Wicca, there's different.
You're roboting there.
Like there's like people that practice like the Gardenian. Yeah, it's the original one. And then there's ones with like, you know, fairy witchcraft and stuff like that. So as far as like the stuff that's just think whatever you want to be. Like there's some people that use magic. And then there's other people that may use kitchen magic, if that makes sense.
Yes, so. I've seen a bit of the kitchen magic.
Can you hear me? It's okay. My internet's amazing over here. So. That's what I get for living in the woods.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But yeah, there's like, you know, there's a whole bunch of them. It just sells moon witches. And forest witches and garden witches, and you know, it's just really descriptive. Like you could probably be anything if you wanted to be.
Okay, so when I was doing, because I did that episode about the witch bottles and mm-hmm. debunking a bit of the Dybbuk box stuff, mm-hmm. and the witch files and the witch bottles, that's one that you got me onto, and. That sounded like a lot of that kitchen witch stuff you were talking about.
Oh, yeah. I would say a witch bottle. I would say that it would fall under kitchen witchery. Or it could fall on any of the other ones because you're basically using like, you know, you're using a vessel, which would be a jar or a bottle or some sort. You're using a liquid. It's traditionally, you know, it's urine and whatever other. I mean, I don't do that, but I'm just saying traditionally that's what people use. So there's a liquid and then there's herbs and crystals and whatever else would go into the witch bottle. Anybody along the other spectrum of witchery could do something like that. People want to look at things, you know, if they want to Google witch bottles.
Yeah,
they'll see some examples of some early stuff, and it's wild.
yeah. So I noticed there's when I was watching a lot of videos, there's a lot of people who said that they don't do that anymore. They don't do the urine and the blood and stuff like that, but they definitely do, you know, different layers that mean different things for warding and mm-hmm. for cleansing and good feelings and stuff like that. Ooh, have we lost you or?
Yeah, and I think that's more of like a modern version.
Okay.
Like we modernized.
Yeah, sorry, comes through very, like, very bulky,
you know,
sorry.
I think things were a little bit more primitive then, so.
There we go. Can you hear me now? Sorry, your phone just went.
Yeah, just
blocky.
Let me know. No, it's okay. Just let me know because, like I said, sometimes it's really choppy.
No, it's been excellent right up until probably the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah. Maybe there's something messing with that because we got through art just fine. As soon as you start talking about witchcraft, something funny started happening.
There you go. they don't want us to know.
Honestly, it's interesting. The amount of people I've spoken to and the amount of tech problems they have when they start talking about something that's more than just surface layer things, mm-hmm. it can get very, very strange.
Oh, yeah. The one night me and a friend of mine, we got on Instagram Live and we're talking about cryptids and my video kept going in and out. So I was like, hello, FBI.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on that. So maybe it got mad. I was talking about witchcraft. I don't know. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, I'm basically, like I said, I do what I feel I want to do. Yep. Like I'm very feeling oriented, like, okay. You know, and most of the time it involves nature.
Yeah. Excellent. So, Where do you start? Like someone who's starting out, say as a who wants to go into being a hedge witch, where would they begin? Is there any book in particular or anything that you would recommend?
I think that there's this whole thing, like people, first of all, be choosy about who you follow and look at, like on social media, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. They'll have you believe in that you got to be born into a family of witches, and you have to, you know, you can only do this if your last name is Smith or whatever. So just ignore a lot of that stuff when you're starting out, because a lot of it could be misinformation. Kind of do what you feel you need to do. You know, check out books from the library, ask friends for book recommendations. There's a lot of reputable, like, witchcraft authors out there that give you good information. If you're reading something and it doesn't feel right to you, trust that intuition and kind of steer away from it, or kind of figure out why you feel like that. Know what you're talking about. Like, learn, if you want to deal with, like, crystals, learn your crystals. Okay. Like, you know, study up on that stuff just so, you know what you're doing. If you're going to be doing something like herbs, if you're going to be working with those, study up on that. Don't do anything before you know you're comfortable, because there's herbs that can kill you. So, you know, basically know what you're doing, like study up on things. And that's if you're going to be really serious into it. A lot of people pick and choose what they want to do with this practice, because that's the way, that's what we can do. So I started because I was the weird, creepy kid, and I was like 13 years old, and I was already like a little goth bunny doing stuff. So drawing unicorns and dragons, so that just became like the next step for me. Yep. So, and also too, I grew up in the woods. So it was kind of like, that it just seemed like a natural, the next step for me is to do all that. So,
yeah, fair.
But enough. Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, for little witches, just start out, get your information and do what feels right to you. Like there's no rules. There's really no rules. So
that's one thing I can say in Australia here, that's never really been covered up or hidden away, is witchcraft and Wiccan beliefs. It's actually, it's really funny because you can go down the main street of most small towns and find some sort of a Wiccan store or an occult type store selling a lot of the items that you're talking about. It's selling a lot of probably rip off things as well. I think some of them just want to make a bit of money. But but it's one aspect of our society that's never been really pushed aside. Is this this Wiccan spiritualism, which is really, really interesting considering what I was saying before about they're being a bit closed off to ideas of Yowie and Bunyips and things like that, which are, you know, really old stories, ancient stories even. But
exactly, like they're from ancestors, so it's kind of like, why are you pushing it aside? But that could be probably a whole nother discussion. It just depends. Like, you know, some places you cannot say anything about that kind of thing.
Okay.
Like where I'm at, it's really conservative. Right. There's one witch shop that's in the next town over from me, but they're low key. Like you wouldn't know it's a witch shop unless you are a practitioner. Like they're really low key, and they cater to everybody. They call themselves the gift shop. But yet, like if I go 2 hours away to like a major city, there's tons of stuff going on there. So it just, here in this country, it just depends on like locale where you're at. So, and whether it's going to be accepted or not.
I guess that's always been that way because, you know, if you're around, so Salem back in the day, there's some pretty scary stuff from back in those times.
Exactly. And it's like, and right now it's a little volatile in this country. So, you know, there's a lot of religious things going on and whatnot. So, I think
There's attention everywhere at the moment. I keep a pretty close pulse, fingers close to the pulse in America there, just because I have so many American friends now, all of you in the mm-hmm. in the podcast network. And yeah. It's the tensions you're feeling over there are very similar to the tensions we have over here. You know, it's just that we're not big enough that our stories get out there, you know, but we've had protests and riots and things as well.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a feeling. I remember just before 2020, not saying I had a premonition or anything, but I remember having a feeling. I said to a mate, in 2019, I said, something big is coming. There was just a feeling to me in the air that something was going to snap, mm-hmm. whether it was another world war, I didn't know. I just felt like there was something big coming, within the next year. And, then I spoke to my mate not long ago, at the pub, and he said to me, he came over, he goes, oh, you definitely picked that one. Because we've only been allowed to go back into our pubs and clubs. And, he goes, yeah, you definitely picked that one. That was a bit eerie. I said, yeah, I don't know. I said, there was just something about the tension, and I'm feeling a similar thing right now, but mm-hmm. not, I don't know what it is. It's just, I've got a really, really strong gut feeling that there's something else coming. Like there's something.
Yeah. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not alone. And back before 2020, like the last half of 2019, you were not alone.
Yeah.
Like I felt like there was a shoe going to drop. Like it was just waiting. Yeah. And a bunch of us, like a bunch of, I always call us like enlightened and woos. Like I was just like a bunch of my, you know, my witchy friends felt the same way. Yeah. Like we just felt like there was going to be this shift and something big was going to happen. So basically that's your intuition coming in.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I don't know if it's whether it's because I do read and research a lot of, like I don't, it, when I'm doing media reports and stuff, mm-hmm. for me, it won't be, you know, watch CNN or watch my local news. It'll be check like 10 different resources. If they're all saying the same thing, then I'm probably on the money about a story that I'm looking at. If they all say something completely different, then there's probably a bit of politics involved. There's probably a bit of, creative journalism, if you will, involved. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the scary thing is I think right now, if you look at journalism right now across the world, I think they've realized, and this is sort of diving in, not conspiratorial stuff, but I think they've realized that they've really shot themselves in the foot in the last 12 months. Like the media's really put the fear into people for the last 12 months, and it's led to some pretty bad stuff around the world. And I think the media is now starting to realize that there's a voice on the internet they can't fight. They it's so easy to hold someone accountable now because we can, we have it all. Like once it goes on the internet, it never disappears. So
bingo. Yep. It's always out there. Don't be stupid because we'll find it. And exactly. I think that goes along with everything you're saying goes along with this whole year in spirituality.
Yep.
Like I have talked to people that said that the, you know, when the pandemic started, they believed one way. And then when the pandemic was going on, they started believing another way. Yep. Like they may have said, well, I never, you know, believed in like, you know, energy or intuition or meditating or doing some yoga or, you know, anything like that. But since the pandemic's been going on, that's what's keeping me sane. There's like this whole resurgence, like, there's a lot of people getting into, I read this article. There's a lot of millennials getting into witchcraft.
Yep.
Because of what's going on in the country.
And I'm seeing more and more people coming into and talking about occultism and stuff like that. I'm mm-hmm. seeing more and more people talking about the Golden Dawn seems to be making a resurgence.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
really, really interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of people have like talked about, you know, witches being the original feminists.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of social justice. There's a lot of social justice when you're a witch.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a lot of people.
A lot of empowerment. Yeah.
Exactly. For, yeah. you know, and a lot of people mind their business and do their practice, and that's fine. But a lot of people who identify as witches do a lot of the activism. So yeah. it's kind of like, yeah, I think we're going to see more and more as it comes through. Also too, we got our government over here telling us that they know about UFOs. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I think things are going to start picking up. Like,
I'm
on such a fence
with that, because
yeah,
I'm on such a fence. I'm getting splinters because my biggest problem with it is that
I'm going to steal that and I'm going to use it.
For sure.
That's amazing.
but I am, because my opinion of it is, okay, so for possibly 100 years, even more, the American government's known about UFO encounters.
Uh-huh.
That's what we're potentially looking at. So you zoom forward to now, and all of a sudden, the government that's been covering these up for forever is now saying that, hey, we're going to show you what these pilots have been seeing. And then all of a sudden, all the UFO crowd, and I cop a bit of flack from the UFO community. The UFO community is so mercurial. Like, they'll rip each other to shreds, and the government must love that, because then all of a sudden the government comes out and says, yeah, we're going to give you all this information. And all of a sudden the big majority of the UFO community comes out and goes, thank you, government. Thank you so much. Give me all this information. And I'm sitting here going, they hid all this from us for years, like possibly over 100 years. And you now want to just drink the milk that they're pouring out? Like, to me, I'm like, do we not want to check if it's poison first? Do we not want to check if it's tarnished, if they're not selling us a fake narrative to throw us completely off?
Yeah, to distract us from something, which is totally, you know, I do my own research and whatnot. So I'm right there. I'm on the fence too.
Getting splinters out here.
So I'm on the same way. Like, it's kind of like, are they telling us this because they want us to know, or are they telling us to distract us, or are they telling us because they think we're stupid and we're going to believe everything? I think, even though we got to question that, and even though, like, it may or may not be a thing, I think the fact that that's come out and people are like, whoa, okay, it's made people think. So I feel like everything's going to start twisting. Like, it's going to go from, you know, everything's terrible, UFOs aren't real, Bigfoot doesn't exist, all this other stuff, to people possibly realizing that some things may actually be, you know, there. Things may exist. I feel like the collective consciousness is going to shift a different way.
Exactly.
And I think that started with all these little millennials, you know, getting tired of what's going on and switching to alternate, you know, forms of, like, you know, faith and whatnot. So,
and I think when you say millennials, we do need to just sort of say there's, because I technically am a millennial. I'm on the very, I'm probably the very first start of the millennials. Now, the problem with that is we see it as two completely
I'm 44, so, you know, everybody's kids. And my daughter's 22, so everybody's kids.
So I'm 32, and so I'm right on that cusp of when millennials became a thing. So we actually, there's a group of us that are probably 28 to 35 who are technically within that group, but we have so much not in common with these newer millennials. We've gone from a group of us that I notice who are all about, and I think the group you're talking about is my age group, where we're all sort
of, I was going off that, you know, what I've read and stuff, and it's like the younger people and the, like, the middle and the end of the millennials are coming out with a different view on a lot of different things.
Because I'm seeing them, I'm seeing a lot of the newer, the later millennials going right back into that whole believe everything the government tells you.
Yeah.
Like, when I hear the words, we're the government and we're here to help, That sends a shiver down my spine.
I don't believe that.
Whenever you hear
one
that,
second.
You know something bad's going to happen. But the new millennials, the later millennials, they see that as comforting. They see that big government is a very comforting thing. And to me, I being in that group that that saw what happened, we have the knowledge of what happened in the 80s and the 70s. And then we saw it go way back to being conservative again, where we had the free love movement all the way now into the 90s, where everyone became locked down again, and then grunge came about. And then
Everybody was angry at grunge.
Exactly. And then we went into the 2000s and the, say, 2003 to 2010, where all of a sudden this pop type culture formed. And now all of a sudden.
Yeah, music didn't exist.
Yeah. Well, really, honestly, and we talked about this with Sandman, I think it was. When WAP is the biggest song of all time, are you serious?
Hey, you know what? That song slaps. Okay, that song slaps.
I remember when a big song was something like. Anything by the Beatles, even the B-side tracks of the Beatles was more impactful than WAP.
Hey, you know, like I said, that song slaps, okay? your listeners are going to be like, these people are crazy.
Oh, yeah.
We're just having a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
You're here for entertainment.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I wanted to bring you on for, was just have a chat. And because we've been talking for so long on Twitter and all that, although it'd be really good just get you on to actually sort of meet you properly.
Yeah, I'm just funny. I'm a funny person. So
no, it's good. It's good value.
Exactly. So they're not going to be bored. That's what it is. They're not going to be bored. But I mean, it's just, you know, I think a lot of people that are older than me, I think are still possibly, some of them are still stuck in that whole, like, the government is comfort thing.
Yeah.
But it's like the people younger, I feel like, are switching over, like most of them. Some of them are still, like, you know, feeding into what the government's telling you, but I think some of them are switching over, and they're thinking about all this alternative stuff.
There's certainly a movement to self-sustaining, if you've noticed. Like, there's a lot more people who are making things for themselves. Baking and cooking has become a big thing again. Whereas, like, for a good decade there, it was all about fast food and who makes the best fast food. But now it's gone back to even, like, not a sponsor of the show, but if they want to, I'd be more than happy. Like things like HelloFresh coming onto the scene. Which is technically, my wife and I look at that. We love cooking, and we look at that and go, what the hell? But then when we think about it, wait, what about someone who lives in the city who doesn't know how to cook, who doesn't have time to cook every day? That is a perfect little package that they can use. There's a lot of people who didn't, and this comes back to your witchcraft. I remember my mum and a few others told me, you know, when you cook, you sort of just, you do a lot of cooking by feel once you become good at it. And it sort of feels like a little bit like that with witchcraft from what I've seen. There's a lot of stuff, especially the witch bottle stuff, sort of keeping your hands busy and doing things by feel.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when you know that you've, like, kind of reached what you wanted to do, is when you can just start doing things because they feel good to you. Yep. Like, and they feel like you're supposed to be doing it.
Okay.
It takes a long time to get to that, usually, for people. I don't know. It took a long time for me because I rebelled the entire time. But now I'm just like, yeah, okay, screw it. I guess I am what I am.
But
I mean, it's the same exact thing. Like, a lot of people that do, like, a lot of the cooking in the kitchen, a lot of them end up, if they're a witchcraft practitioner, they end up being, you know, what would be considered a kitchen witch. So,
yep.
So very descriptive. So find something, pick it, and go for it.
As I've just seen the time, we've gotten a bit carried away. I want to get into your experiences. The one I'm really interested in is, I've read it out on the show. You sent it to me when I first started doing listener stories. And it was the Men in Black, your connection with them. So we sort of, we talked about that. We mentioned it at the start. So what's your, do you want to have a, well, where do you start with that? It's hard to really, how do you start with the Men in Black?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So I don't know if it was actual. So let me clear this. I don't know if it was actually that, but that's how I felt at the time. Like, and still feel like, I feel like if it was going to be anybody, I feel like that I actually saw like an MIB that day. Kind of give you a little backstory. This was like 15 some years ago. I was really getting into like writing and doing stuff with like UFOs and weird stories. I was interviewing people and collecting their like stories. I was mapping out weird parts of the city. I was going to like, you know, UFO conferences and, you know, getting information that way. So I was going to basically write a book about the weird goings on in the area in the city I lived in at the time. And, you know, I did, like I said, a lot of interviews of people over the phone, in person. This was before we did a lot of email stuff. So, you know, I did a lot of in-person stuff. So one day I was going to lunch from my day job and I went to a really popular area in the city and it was a bank. And I got out of my car, went to go in the bank. The whole parking lot was empty or was totally full. Like everybody was there. It was lunch rush. It was bumping. Went inside, did my banking, came out, and the parking lot was empty except for my car and one other car. The other car was in the corner of the parking lot. And it was like an older black, it looked like an older cop car. But it looked like it had been taken care of. If that makes sense, like it looked like it wasn't old, like it was new old. Yes. I know that sounds crazy, but and I went to get in my car, not thinking anything of it, and I felt like somebody was staring at me. And the car I had at the time didn't have like the automatic button locky thing. I had to actually put the key in and lock it. And something told me to look up, and I look up and whoever was in this car had rolled their window down.
Oh, hello. Oh, I think we've just lost Christine for a moment there. We'll try to get her back.
Are you there?
Yep, you're there. Yep.
So okay. I don't know what happened.
No, you're right. So
tell me where I stopped.
The person just rolled the window down.
Okay, cool. All right. So the person rolled the window down. And I could see that they were wearing like, it looked like to me like a suit, and they were wearing dark sunglasses. And I couldn't tell at the time if they were wearing a hat or not, but I remember them being like really weird looking. Like he looked like he didn't have any hair. Like it looked like he was very pale and he just like stared at me. And I felt so like, what the hell is he staring at? And then I started to panic. Like I started being like, okay, this isn't right. What's going on? It's in the middle of the day. It's their lunch rush. This parking lot was full when I got here. Why is it not full? So I start really getting creeped out. I finally get in my car. I look back. The window has been rolled up on that car. And before I could, you know, get myself together, get my car and drive or reverse to get out of the parking spot, I look up, the car's not there anymore. And what's crazy about that, there's only one way into that parking.
I lost you again there, Christina. I think Christina.
This thing's crazy. I'm back.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, if it happens again, I'll pop back in. So,
yep, yep. No, you're right.
So the parking lot, there's only one way out of the parking lot completely. And that would have been to drive past my car.
Yep.
Because it was like a two-way little area. And then you got onto like a main road and then it was an intersection. with, you know, four roads, and it was a really busy intersection. So it wasn't like, you know, they pulled out and drove away. Like, I did not see them leave the parking spot, and I was looking up.
Wow. Wow.
And I didn't see them out in the traffic either. Like, and the light was red and there was traffic backed up. So I'm like, where did they go? Who was this person and where did they go? And I don't know who it was, but that really freaked me out like the rest of the day. And shortly after that, I stopped getting so much into that. Like, I kind of put my whole little project on hold because other things were coming up and whatnot. But, you know, to this day, I don't know who it was. I don't know what it was. I can only assume that it was probably something like.
So. Just wait and she'll...
All right.
Yep. You're right.
This thing's driving me crazy. So I can only like assume that that's what it is okay. Something like an MIB. So,
and,
I mean, whether that's exactly what it is.
Well, the circumstances that it was in is very interesting because it's strange because you wouldn't think that you tie all that together. And that's what makes that interesting. It's not just that you saw this car. It's that you saw this car while you're investigating all this stuff.
You know,
That's the part that makes this very interesting. And I do think that when, whether it's MIB in the way of they're another species, whether the MIB is just another investigation team, my personal thing is that if someone's on the verge of discovering something, that there's going to be some sort of a team out there to sort of just make sure they either throw you off the path or send you down another path. And I see the MIB more as like a disinformation branch of the government.
Yeah. Like they're cleaners almost. They're like, they want to make sure that you're going to be freaked out enough not to say something. And I don't know. I think it was because I was just busy doing it. Like, I was really out there interviewing people and whatnot. So I think, I got a press pass and went to a UFO convention. And, I think maybe it's just because I was asking questions.
And I think you're probably asking questions.
I don't know.
Yeah. But
maybe. I was just listening to people tell me about their. Yeah. I was just listening to people tell me their weird stories.
Yeah.
Basically. Yep. Yep. I've heard several alien abduction stories. Like, I don't know if I was close to something or I just don't know. I just know that that's one of those instances that was just so crazy in my life.
Yeah.
That happened.
Yeah. I think it's definitely, to me, it's something I wouldn't be brushing off as it could have just been something like paranoia or something because. If that sort of thing doesn't happen to you normally, that it stands out. Yeah. You know? If you don't see like things like that as a normal thing, and then all of a sudden you start seeing it, it's going to have an effect. And I think sometimes that's all it takes with these disinformation agents, and is just to show up and get in people's heads. And that's probably their first tactic. And then the next one might be to go and chat to the people that you spoke to and tell them, maybe you shouldn't be talking to this person. And I strongly believe that there's a case to be made that there's a lot of abductees and a lot of witnesses who have had government people come and speak to them and say, don't talk to XYZ because they're a bit of a kook. Yeah, and they'll make you sound like, oh no, he's a nut. So if you talk to him more, he's gonna drag you down with him. So
yeah.
So disinformation, but to the attempt to ridicule and make your study sound disingenuous, and then all of a sudden the witness goes, oh, well, maybe I don't want to talk about it anymore. Maybe I won't talk to that person about it. Yeah, you got a good point. I won't do that anymore.
Yeah.
It's not a blatant threat of,
hey, yeah, if you I say think anything, they do.
We're going to kill you.
Yeah, I think they do a lot of different things. Mm. This was a long time ago, And I can honestly, and I was much younger, so I can honestly say that scared me very badly. But now if it happened, I would be like, what's your problem, man?
Yeah.
I would have approached them and been like, what do you need from me?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, stop following me.
Definitely.
Because, you know, I'm like 20 years older, but.
Well, I've thought about this. I've honestly thought about this because I want to do some more on the road stuff. And my plan is to get a small one-person camper trailer and with my Land Rover go across country and just visit haunted places and places where strange things have been seen, UFOs, cryptids, whatever. But my big thing is having a young family, it adds to a lot of the potential physical hazards, mental risk, there's
dangers,
financial loss. Yeah, there's dangers there that you don't think about until you're responsible for other people.
Yeah.
I think people go sort of headlong into this stuff without weighing up first, say, if you do find something, it may not be UFO or alien or cryptid related. It could actually be that you stumble upon a something going on in the government. You might find something going on with the council just as a side note to the thing you were studying. Are you ready to pull that thread if you do find something that leads to something else? You know, it's always something that sort of plays
exactly.
My mind.
Exactly. And the thing is, I think the reason I was doing it is because I've been obsessed with like the weird stuff since I was like a kid. Like I read Bud Hopkins Intruders when I was like 9 years old.
Yep.
Where I live has got some wild stuff. So it's like, you know, I've always kind of been obsessed with it. So when I started working on these projects, I just kind of went into it. I didn't think about it at the time.
Yep.
Because I didn't think anything was going to happen, if that makes sense.
No, 100%.
So.
And that's the thing is that I've got two problems that I see that pop up a bit. And that's we have people who don't know what they're getting into or people who know too well about what they're getting into. So they'll fabricate things. And going back to what we were talking about before, where you're saying, you know, someone will come out and say, oh, I slept with an alien, and then all of a sudden it destroys the conversation you're trying to have, and you're checking your shopping list, as you said. And to me, the same thing happens with everything. And with all these studies, cryptids, UFOs, hauntings, all that, someone will throw something crazy in there. And sometimes I wonder if some of these people are not necessarily government disinformation agents, but whether they're just trolls. Yeah, just trolls wanting to ruin the research that people are doing. So I'm going to put my hand up. I'm going to say I'm an abductee. And then when you interview them, they have the craziest story. You put it out there thinking this is great. Then all of a sudden you find out that person is completely discredited 2 weeks later. Because they weren't even in the state at the time when this happened. And then also,
well, it's a good thing
that makes your work discredited.
Exactly. When that happens, what you need to do is make sure that you have questions that nobody else can answer possibly for these people. Like you kind of put feelers out. Like I can tell when somebody's completely full of it.
Yep.
Sometimes, you know, like a lot of the times I could tell.
Yep.
Because especially if you were interviewing somebody across the table, you could tell, you could pick up on their body language and stuff. So,
yeah,
I mean, I'm sure somebody fed me a line of bull once in a while, and that's just what happens with that. But I mean, I enjoyed doing it. I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
And you know, if the men in black want to show up to say hello, I got questions for them.
And you were saying that before we started the show, you were saying that you're interested in starting your own podcast again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah. Me and a friend of mine, we're going to be doing some stuff. It's going to be rad.
So once you've got that out there, I'll definitely help you promote it. I might, I won't ask you any more of your encounters, because we're hitting the hour and a half mark, But
yeah, you'll have to cut some of this, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I was going to say, let's save some of your other accounts because I'd love to have you back on again in the future and possibly mm-hmm. with your friend as well, especially when it's getting closer to when you're going to launch your show. And then we can have a bit of a promo type interview with you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're on the list of people we're going to have on our show too.
Oh, that'd be great.
We'll be asking you. That'd be really we're going to think of something crazy. Yep, and we're going to have you on so we could talk.
Yowies are my thing.
Yep, we are. We're going to talk about crazy stuff.
I start off in, this is something that not many people know. A few listeners who listen to the show from the very get-go probably do. But I actually started off in Yowie investigation. So Yowie's Australian Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. And I was a non-believer, a complete skeptic, still on, I don't know. But I actually went and worked for a team, a Yowie research team in New South Wales, and they worked out of the Blue Mountains, and I was a equipment guy. So my first sort of small change job when I was a side job for weekends, my side hustle, was going out and setting equipment up and making sure all the recordings were working. And because I used to work, I did a couple of years in radio as a assistant. Uh-huh. They used those skills, and it was really fun. Never found anything, obviously, but it was really interesting. So all the Yowie stuff I picked up along the way, just listening to these researchers, was really good. And then my second job in the weird stuff was a co-guide in a haunted haunted. I won't say because it will give me away. But a haunted place in Australia, and we were. Uh-huh. I was an assistant tour guide, and I'd walk these people through this place, and would set up these tours, and it was really fun. Like we had mediums come along. People wanted to. We had mediums bring spirit boards and things like that, and
nice.
It was really creepy stuff. But yeah, it's. So there's definitely a lot of stuff that I'd love to talk to you guys about as well, because that'd be fun.
Spirit boards aren't creepy. Come on now.
I've got one. I'm looking at an upside down one right now on my coffee table, and the amount of people that sit there, I do believe I don't like leaving it face up, because the person uh-huh. who made it for me said, look, just don't have it face up. So I always have it face uh-huh. down. But I have it on my desk, and the amount of people who have sat here in the office with me from my own workplace that don't know I do all this, that have had coffee around this spirit board, if they only flipped a bit of wood over, they'd see a spirit board underneath.
You're going to have to do a spirit board episode.
Yeah, I did one on Ouija boards.
I did
an early one on Ouija boards.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah,
I may have probably listened to it. I don't remember some things.
It was like my first maybe 20 episodes. So I don't think I was even in the network back then.
Okay.
It was very, very early
on. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, I'd say so. But I'm looking at doing a few rehashes of some old shows because it's been so long. It's been 2 years now since I did those topics, and there's been a few new things come out since then, so I might do a rehash.
So there you
Ouija boards, but I might focus more on the spirit board side of it.
I know. Yeah. I'm thinking about your oddball hotel artwork. May need a digital upgrade.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so
because maybe I can make it look just like I have it in my head.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. But I like the original too. But anyway, we might have to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
No worries.
Really great to actually speak, not face to face, but speak to you properly. Because it's definitely a different thing from talking over Twitter.
Exactly.
But so do you just want to go through where people can find you again?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram and Twitter as The Crescent Hair, all one word. I don't Twitter as much because I forget about it, but I definitely live on Instagram. I'm on TikTok too, but I'm still figuring it out.
Yep.
If you go to thecrescenthair.com, it's going to redirect you to my Etsy shop where you can find all my stuff. If you want to keep up with art that I do like on a daily or whatnot, go and follow me on Instagram. So
excellent.
That's where I practically live. So
excellent. And those links will be in the description below this episode, and also in the Twitter link that I send out. I use Twitter quite a bit. I think it's for me,
yeah,
it's the easiest one I can use on the go. I'm not a Facebook person. I've got a Facebook, but I do neglect it. I just can't get my head around Facebook. It changes every time I get back on there. So no, Twitter's
all right. Are you there?
Yep. That's all right. Just kept on,
sorry.
Kept on going. That's all good. All right. So yeah, thank you again, and yeah, we'll definitely have you back on, and hopefully see some more of your art very soon.
Oh yeah, definitely, Oz. That was fun.
No worries. All right. Well, thank you for joining me, and stay safe out there in the weird.
Alrighty, so I hope you all enjoyed that interview. Make sure you check out the Twitter page, the Facebook page. It's at Aussie Oddball. The Facebook and the Instagram is the Oddball Aussie Podcast. Also check out the T Public store for any merch and support the show in a monetary way. Also, check out all the links below to Christina's work and all of her artwork, because it's great stuff. And I'll be talking to you all very, very soon. I hope you enjoyed it. And once again, as I always say, be respectful to the guests that I have, because they're brave enough to come on the show, and they're brave enough to have a chat. So I love having guests on the show. All righty then, look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.